Before starting today's meeting, let me share with you some technical information. Today we have interpreters for the following languages: English, French, German, Spanish, Italian, Polish, Bulgarian, Greek, Danish, Hungarian, Estonian, and Croatian. Please be aware that phone interventions or only audio connections with no video will not be interpreted. The speakers are invited to speak their mother tongue if it is one of languages for which interpretation is available. We will connect with members participating in the meeting via our remote meeting tool. Please make sure that when you want to take the floor, you press the raise a hand button, and once you are given the floor, you press on the speak button. Also, let me announce that this meeting is web stream. So now let's move to our first speaker, to Mr. Robert Grubišić, DG Justice and Consumers from the European Commission and Secretary of the European Judicial Network in Civil and Commercial Matters. Welcome, Mr. Grubišić, and I'll give you the floor for 10 minutes. Thank you.
Dear Mr. Chair, dear members of the committee, dear all, dear participants, thank you so very much for me having been given this opportunity to speak in front of you. Indeed, it is not only because I am part of the unit dealing with civil justice policy and which has been impacted by the current Commission priority on digitalization that I have this pleasure. It is also because I have the immense pleasure of working with the European Judicial Network in Civil and Commercial Matters, which effectively represents civil and commercial judges on an EU level. And I would be more than happy to share with you the needs, the priorities that we've established in both of these bodies. I would like to start by saying that I've had a look at the agenda and the background documentation that was shared ahead of this meeting, and I have to apologize for one small thing, and that is the fact that I only work in the area of civil and commercial justice, while your agenda is much, much more ambitious than just that. I've seen that you have in mind to discuss matters of administrative law, matters of broader legislative procedures on a European level, as well as on a member state level. However, the fact that I do specialize in civil and commercial matters puts me in a very particular place, and that is that I am now able to discuss with you a bit the background of the historic importance of the European civil and commercial justice. And I hope you can indulge me a few minutes while I do, because I think that you will see that some of the principles behind the EU legislation in this area, these principles are very overarching and relevant to the current push and need for digitalization overall. That having been said, I would like to mention that the story of European civil and commercial law, it starts a bit more than 20 years ago, in 1999, in the Tampere Council, where several conclusions were being put forward. One of these conclusions, one of the most important conclusions of the Tampere Council, was the realization that in order to have an open Europe, in order to have a Europe without borders, where citizens and businesses are free to move and establish themselves, it is not just important to allow them to move physically, to move across borders. No, in order to have true movement, in order to have true establishment across borders, it is absolutely vital that citizens and businesses, when going from one member state to another, that they don't go in a physical way only, but that they are able to carry over with themselves all the rights and obligations that they would normally have in their member states of origin. So, for the next 20-something years, the Commission and the legislators have put in place a wonderful cycle of acquis, which ensured that when a citizen, for example, from Poland goes to Germany, that citizen can carry with himself all the rights and obligations pertaining to maybe some civil or commercial claims or family law claims that he would have. And that I would dare to say has worked very well. For 20 years, we've had very good acquis in this area. And when a citizen needed to go to court, there would be no issue. The citizen would identify a court using the acquis and the rules put in place on jurisdiction and applicable law. The citizen would go to court and that's it. And the citizen would just be able to ensure his rights. That did work until the very beginning of this year. Until the very beginning of this year, when at the end of February, beginning of March, courts started to close their doors. It was not possible for courts, for judges to work as they once did. And normally, for some of the other businesses, like coffee shops or restaurants, that wouldn't be such a big deal. Just close your doors and try to weather this storm, this economic storm, and reopen your doors when the opportunity allows it. However, you will imagine that if you are, for example, a citizen and you've divorced your spouse and your spouse has taken your common child from Poland, let's say far away to Portugal, it is not the same situation as a restaurant would be closing a door that a judge tell you, well, we're unable to resume our operation. Contact us in a month, in 2 months, perhaps even next year, depending on when the pandemic subsides and when the courts are able to resume their operation. So we've actually found ourselves in a historically problematic situation this year. And that is one where citizens, for the first time in Europe, do not have a guarantee that they can ensure their rights tied to their civil claims, commercial claims, family law claims, succession claims. A whole string of claims now lie uncertain because the technology has not followed the development of needs of the citizens. This, of course, is not a situation without a remedy. It was already for 10 years that the Commission has known about the need to develop this area of e-justice, that digitalization is something that can ensure quick and thereby effective justice. And the Commission was very fast to act to push digitalization as a very prominent priority in the beginning of this year. However, this does not mean that all problems are solved in this way. In order to have an effective digitalization of services, of judicial services, to ensure the rights of European citizens and businesses, several things need to be put in place. I would first start this new subchapter in stating that there are already acquis in the area of civil and commercial justice, which do have good digital components. For example, a very prominent success story of the European legislators and the Commission is the adoption last year of two new regulations on service of documents and taking of evidence. Both of these regulations have prominent provisions which set up a framework which allows it to which allows digital tools to be used when judicial documents need to be sent from one authority to another in a cross-border situation, or when people need to be heard, or when evidence needs to be performed in another way before a court. However, this does not mean that all problems are solved just because we can send judicial documents in a cross-border way. There are still many things to be done. For example, imagine yourself being a citizen which needs to take up a court, and you are unable to do so because the court has closed its doors to physical access. Perhaps you are not able to go to your lawyer because lawyers have closed their doors as well. What needs to be done as a future step is citizens need to be ensured that from the comfort of their own homes, they will be able to seize authorities, communicate with authorities in an effective way, and that their communication will be recognized in a harmonized way throughout the member states. Of course, the obligation in ensuring this environment where citizens and businesses can ensure their rights and obligations, this is divided into, let's say, two obligations, two sets of obligations. One set of obligations would lie squarely with the European institutions. So, to think as a way of moving forward on how future legislation can be digitally ready. There are already numerous regulations which could be called digitally ready. For example, I will mention one in the area of family law, the maintenance regulation, which already has 11 forms attached to it. These forms are harmonized forms, and whenever a citizen wants to have a decision established under this regulation, the citizen uses a harmonized form. I don't have to explain to you how this makes digitalization very easy if we already have one harmonized venue of communication. But this does not mean that the job is done. The European institutions need to keep this in mind going forward, that all new legislation needs to have in mind this potential for digitalization. But that is also not the whole story. On the other hand, it is the member states that should really keep this in mind and learn the lessons of this pandemic, insofar as member states need to keep in mind that all legislation going forward needs to have an active digital dimension when it is appropriate for it to have.
Mr. Grubišić, you have 1 minute left.
Oh, sorry. What I've mentioned already on a harmonized way of citizens contacting their authorities means absolutely nothing if the member states do not keep in mind that an infrastructure needs to be ensured on a member state level for them to do so. Thankfully, and I would close my intervention with just this mention, the Commission for the last few months, and it will be completed in December of this year, has been performing a mapping study of the digitalization infrastructure of the member states to see which member states are on which level, how digitalization can be promoted, and where the loopholes and the missing areas exist. That having been said, I can still only say that I very much look forward to hearing the discussions and the conclusions of this committee meeting. Thank you so very much once again for having given me the opportunity to speak very shortly about this topic and potentially still reply to any questions should they arise and should we have a time to address them. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Grubišić. We move on now to Ms. Lives Beck-Nielsen, member of the Danish Parliament and a spokesperson on digital affairs. In January 2018, the Danish Parliament adopted an agreement on digital ready legislation, which ensures a simpler, clearer legal framework, easy to understand and translate into secure and user-friendly digital solutions. We look very much forward to listen for your experience, Ms. Beck-Nielsen. The floor is yours. You have 10 minutes.
Thank you for inviting me to give a presentation on public digitization in Denmark. It's a rather brief presentation, but I'll try to outline both some facts about the situation in Denmark and some of the ethical dilemmas that come with a higher degree of digitization. I'll start out by outlining the rollout of digitization and give some examples and continue to the dilemmas that poses and the ethical concerns that we have in my party, the Socialist People's Party, which, as some of you know, is part of the Greens EFA in the European Parliament. Denmark is a highly digitized country. In fact, Denmark has come first, second, and third in a number of global and European surveys. And in some regards, we trace the story of digitization in Denmark back to 68, when Denmark introduced the so-called CPR system, a register with personal social security numbers. Since then, all newborn persons have been given a CPR number, and the digital infrastructure which has followed is directly linked to the CPR system. Denmark has had an explicit focus on public digitization and digital infrastructure for almost 20 years, and we have established digitization strategies between the state, the municipalities, and the regions of the country. In 2001, Denmark introduced the so-called digital signature, so citizens could sign documents digitally. Since then, over the years, a couple of examples of what have followed. In the Danish, the so-called NemKonto, which directly translated is an easy account, which facilitates transfers of social benefits and salaries. Digital Post and NemID, which means digital mail and a digital mailbox, and the so-called EasyID and mandatory digital self-service, which all means that citizens have to are able to communicate with authorities digitally. For instance, when applying for benefits, when register a new address, or when correcting the annual tax return. However, there are some exceptions to the rule in regards to citizens with special needs, but that has been somewhat of a political struggle as well. Denmark has also rolled out digital infrastructure in our health system and the website sundhed.dk, which means health.dk. The citizens can see what information the health service system has and who accesses the data. In accordance, the Common Medicine Card has been established so actors in the health system can access information on citizens' medicine. These are just some examples of existing public digital infrastructure in Denmark. In 2018, all of the existing political parties of that time in the Danish Parliament reached an agreement on enabling new legislation to be ready for digitization, the subject which you have invited me to speak on. The purpose of the agreement is to promote more effective, coherent and easy procedures and case handling in the public sector. As a consequence of the agreement, the lawmakers, when preparing a new law draft, have to take into consideration that the new rules should be possible to administer and support digitally. My party is part of the agreement, and we support it. However, we have also have and have some concerns. When we negotiated the agreement, it was imperative for us to ensure citizens' legal rights, and that we could focus on a high level of IT security and data protection. These elements are mentioned in the agreement, but we maintain our focus and concerns. And we do so because the technical progress and opportunities are accompanied by ethical dilemmas. In order to maintain a state based on justice and integrity, and not least to maintain the citizens' trust in the authorities, we must promote transparency and data minimization and ensure that data is only used for legitimate purposes, which is not always the case in our opinion. It's relevant to mention that a survey from 2019 showed that the population's trust in data management of public authorities hit only index 60, which means there's a quite long way to go to 100. While Denmark may be a highly digitized country, our level of security has some major lacks. We have seen a number of scandals regarding digital infrastructure and data protection. For instance, last year we witnessed a large data scandal on role in the National Police of Denmark. An error in an IT program used by the police to register telephone records may have resulted in incorrect convictions or hindered investigations. And now more than 10,000 legal cases dating back to 2010 has to be revised. Another example is from 2016, when the State Serum Institute accidentally sent 5,000 Danish CPR numbers to a Chinese visa authority instead of to the Statistics Office of Denmark. Our concerns are not only regarding a lack of IT security and flawed IT systems. Our concerns also regard deliberate data retention and data mining. In 2018, the Danish municipality of Gladsaxe, a city close to Copenhagen, conducted a trial to trace vulnerable children through data mining. They were able to do so due to some exceptions to the existing law. The municipality collected and mined data on the parents' nationality, their missed visits to the pediatrician, unemployment, mental illness, history of substance abuse, even returning library books back too late. The Gladsaxe trial caused a huge political debate in Denmark. While some argued that tracing vulnerable children was a legitimate purpose of data mining, some argued that it undermined the rule of law and the fundamental respect to privacy. My party argued the latter, and we did both out of legal concerns and the fact that studies from the United Kingdom on data mining show little effect in regards to actually tracing vulnerable children. Thus, data mining does not always give an accurate picture of the situation. This discussion took place in the months before the GDPR entered into force, and the government then was updating the legislation to be GDPR compliant, but at the same time they proposed additional legislation making it possible for more municipalities and cities and authorities to use data mining, going against the spirit of the GDPR. The debate in the Danish parliament luckily put some restrictions on the data mining prospects, and later the city of Gladsaxe entered the data mining trial after accidentally leaking more than 20,000 citizens' private data and several cases of admitted data breaches. However, the population and political parties continue to be divided on the topic of data mining in regards to streamlining and quickening, for example, tracing vulnerable children, investigating crime, or monitoring recipients of social benefits. And the more examples I've provided are just that, examples, there are many more. I believe that this discussion will continue. It's ambiguous, and we constantly have to weigh pros and cons in decision making. I believe we need a constant focus on data protection and data minimization, especially in a country like Denmark, where public digitization is so widespread. My party and I have suggested some initiatives, for example, that the Danish Data Protection Agency, which is currently an institution under the Ministry of Justice, and thus the government, should be an independent institution residing under the parliament instead, in order to ensure a higher level of checks and balances. We also believe that there should be more strict and clear rules in regards to data mining and data.
Please finish. You have 30 seconds left.
Institutions should have standards for privacy by default and ethical algorithms in public procurements of new systems. These are just some of our suggestions. As I said, the political parties are divided on the matter. It's an ongoing discussion, and we'll maintain our focus on legal rights and respect to privacy. Thank you for inviting me to give this presentation today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Beck-Nielsen. It was quite interesting. As you may know, all what is related to data is going to be one of the big topics during this term in the European Parliament. We are already waiting for the European Commission proposal, legislative proposals on all that has to do with data. And it's something that legislators, we must take a good look how to manage all that data, how we can protect the privacy of our citizens. We're going to open now the floor to our dear members and our dear guests for this first part of the debate. Before giving the floor to the members I have on the list, I want to ask them, please, to tell us all from which country are they coming from and if they wish to disclose this information to what political group they belong. So I'm going to give the floor first to one of our coordinators of the Liberal Family in the European Parliament, Ms. Melchior. Ms. Melchior, you have 2 minutes. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, and thank you to Ms. Beck-Nielsen for her presentation. I think it underlines what we can do as a society if we start digitizing our administrations, which allows for digital legislation, which in turn makes it a lot easier to both to be a citizen and a company in dealing with the public administrations. The tools that Ms. Beck-Nielsen presented to us early in her presentation have really digitized the Danish society to a very high extent that I think that colleagues from across Europe find difficult to believe if they come and visit Denmark. We are able to do steps in family law, to deal with taxation without having to go to any office, without having to sign anything in the physical form. I would say the Danish society is much more digital than the European Parliament. But as was also presented, it is really crucial that the rules protecting citizens are in place and are maintained properly, because with digitalization, and especially if we're using centralized databases for the data, we do also have quite large risks if we do not take care of the data and the rights of our citizens at a sufficient level. And therefore, it's really necessary that the rules that we have within the European Parliament, the legislation that we're proposing on our data strategy, and also the GDPR, that these are maintained at a sufficient level by the member states. Because digitalization can provide great efficiency and great use for our citizens, not only for interacting with governments, but also to ensure their own rights facing the government, because they can track what they're supposed to be getting and what the governments are using. So I'm looking forward to the debate today, because I really think that we can make sure that we get better laws by making sure that we can have oversight on them. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Melchior. Now the floor is for Mr. Kotsiras from Nova Democratia. Mr. Kotsiras, you have 2 minutes.
Καλησπέρα σε όλους. Θα ήθελα ως μέλος του Ελληνικού Κοινοβουλίου και βουλευτής της Νέας Δημοκρατίας που ανήκει στο Ευρωπαϊκό Λαϊκό Κόμμα, εκπροσωπώντας σήμερα την Βουλή των Ελλήνων.
And a member of the New Democracy Party, I would like to share the great progress that my country has made with regard to this topic. So it's an honor and a pleasure for me to be here. You know that as an assembly, we in the Greek Parliament wish to support the economy and to guarantee all the respect of all rights. We are committed to supporting all sectors. Public and private investment in digital technology can help in the transformation of the European economy, turning it into a data-based economy and strengthening the EU. Here we see certain opportunities, for example, 5G technology, and we have already taken legislative initiatives that aim to model legal framework for granting assistance and allocating radio spectrum. And a law adopted in October 2019 contains provisions for a national plan on access to these to networks, including 5G networks. The Greek Parliament has also voted in favour of a new digital law which translates the European Electronic Communications Code and turns it into national law. It also establishes a regulatory framework for a fast transition towards 5G networks. In this context, we are intending to launch an auction for 5G spectrum before the end of the year and to make a capital fund to channel the profits from that auction to support startups in research and development of 5G products. We are also using all available digital tools to fight against tax fraud and to promote the digitalization of public services, including in healthcare and justice. Finally, I wanted to mention one of the most important initiatives that we have undertaken, which is the creation of a national portal for the codification and reform of Greek legislation. What this is about is an electronic hub of for legislation, which will be updated with regularly and will be available to the general public. We have a question to the representative of the European Commission. What decisions will the Commission take as regards administrative justice? Here we see a link between this investment framework that we would like to create in the EU. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now the floor is for Mr. Magalhaes. You have 2 minutes.
I'd like to congratulate the organizers of this debate and the speaker for the contribution. In fact, we need more, and during the pandemic times, I'd say much more of what we have already achieved and done. Single pieces of legislation such as the Digital Signatures Act won't be of much service if they aren't used freely and intensely by the citizens and companies. We have that since the beginning of the century, and we need to massify the use of those tools. But we face new challenges. The future European Code of Communications will offer some of the crucial replies. The brand new fifth generation networks will, one of these days, be a reality in most of the countries and open new doors to new ways of organizing the economy, the public administration, and fight against inequalities in the territories. But we have new questions, new challenges I mentioned, such as making cloud computing real in the context in which the services are basically sold by North American companies, mostly. And that's a debate on data sovereignty, which is going on, the project Gaia, in which the German government has insisted, is relevant for that purpose, but we have no European reply or answer to those issues. I would like to ask the speaker more information on the experience on data mining. Data mining keeps being not much legislated issue. It's done by police forces, it's done by certain sectors of the public administrations, the oversight is sufferable. It could become a serious problem. So we have to limit, to have limits to that. And to...
Please finish, Mr. Magalhães.
Exactly. Last point is this one. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now we move. Thank you very much. Now we move to Mr. Boss, the coordinator of the EPP group. You have 2 minutes.
Vielen Dank, Herr Vorsitzender. Vielen Dank auch den Vortragenden für ihren.
Thank you, Chairman, and I'd like to thank our speakers for their presentations. I think that this development that's taking place is very exciting, but there are certain risks there as well. I would say to Mr. Grubišić that I was wondering during the presentation whether we should put digital tools available to member states for their laws, and then to Mrs. Beck-Nielsen, how would that work out in your country? What experience do you have with that? And to both of you, how would you make this reliable, so reliable that you ensure issues such as cyber and IT security are dealt with? And also, what about identity? How can you be sure that the people who are signed up and using these tools are actually who they say they are? And then, in a European context, I mean, how would that work here? I'd be interested, for example, from the Danish experience, to know how perhaps we could offer several languages for our citizens. And then a further issue on security, what role could blockchain play here to ensure security of content? And do you think that could be an advantage for our businesses and citizens if we open this kind of thing up cross-border? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Boss. Now the floor is for Mr. Walken, the coordinator of the S&D group. Mr. Walken, you have 2 minutes.
Yeah, thank you very much, dear Chair, dear colleagues. First of all, I would like to thank all speakers for being here today. It's a very needed exchange of views, especially during this pandemic, which really forces us to be more digital than ever. My group, of course, welcomes the digitization of lawmaking and public administration. It is a much needed step we need to undertake. However, I would like to agree with Mr. Grubišić that with the digitization, we need to make sure to fully respect existing data protection and privacy standards. Moreover, while digitalization, of course, can increase accessibility for some, we have to guarantee that it does not exclude those who do not have access to digital equipment and or are not digitally literate. And unfortunately, this is still a very high number of our citizens. This is the reason that we also have to use other alternatives or to be clearer. Human contact should always be an option, so no one is left behind. And finally, I would ask the speakers if they could maybe specify if those are, sorry, I just wanted to direct this question to Mrs. Beck-Nielsen especially, sorry. If you could maybe specify if those issues were also part of the reflection in Denmark. Thank you very much. And to answer the question of the chair, I'm connecting today from Germany. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wolken. Thank you, Mr. Wolken. Now we are going to give briefly the floor to our main speakers, to Mr. Grubišić and Ms. Beck-Nielsen. I ask them please to be short, no more than 2 minutes. Mr. Grubišić, the floor is yours.
Yes. Thank you so very much for giving me back the floor, and I would like to thank the members as well for these extremely relevant questions. First, I was very happy to hear on the going on and the developments of the national infrastructure in Greece. That sounds incredibly interesting. And in regards to the question which was raised in this context of how the Commission would ensure support to such projects, well, that question is not as simple as it perhaps sounds. The Commission certainly supports and has supported and will support digital initiatives in the Member States as long as those initiatives pertain to the European framework. I would mention that there has existed the CEF call, the Connecting Europe Facility Fund, which for a long number of years has funded national projects in individual member states as long as those fell within the larger framework of European interoperability in a digital context. The Commission certainly will continue supporting in a monetary way future valuable projects. Concerning the rollout of tools to be used in member states, I would certainly mention the e-codex. E-codex is really a tool which was developed by the member states, recognized by the Commission and the institutions, and then supported in a monetary way after that. The Commission does plan to keep supporting e-codex, and there are plans even to confer the control of e-codex to EULISA so that the member states would have the maximum benefit from a project like that. And just very shortly, concerning identity online in the context of these instruments, all of these instruments and their interoperability has always been in the context of e-justice, and Commission planning has been foreseen to be interoperable within the EID framework. So the unified recognition of member states' ID cards. And this is something that can only be further developed. And if further developed in a harmonized way between the member states and the institutions, that I see as possibly one of the best ways to ensure not just identity security, but security of data overall in an online context. I hope that I've given a coherent answer to these very relevant questions.
Thank you very much to reply to all these questions. Ms. Beck-Nielsen is having some technical problems, so before giving the floor to her, I'm going to give the floor to another guest, to Mr. Miguel Gutierrez. I will present this one as he's a dear friend and a dear colleague from the Spanish Parliament or from my same party, the Liberal Party Ciudadanos. Miguel, you have the floor.
Yo creo unas, en fin, unos mensajes tan clarificadores y tan importantes.
Thank you. Well, I belong to the Ciudadanos Party, which is part of the Renew Group, and obviously we believe that the Europe of the future needs to be digital in nature. We believe it has to be digital or it's simply not going to exist. But that means we have to tackle major challenges as well. Many of those have been discussed: identification, verifying identities, reliable mechanisms, flexible mechanisms, and universal tools as well, so that all citizens can have easy access to them. But I want to focus on two challenges which seem particularly important to me. One has already been mentioned: those people who are not online yet. We have to think of how we can get these people to use digital tools. In some cases it'll be easy, some it'll be difficult. I mean, it may well mean that some services need to be still provided in traditional ways. And the second challenge relates to rural areas and areas where the internet infrastructure, for example, hasn't arrived. Remote areas. I mean, this takes place. This is the case often in Spain, in remote, inaccessible areas. And we believe this is also a major challenge because if we're going to be digital, we have to be digital for everyone. So we have to make a major effort to ensure that these areas can be connected as well. So I have a question there on European budgets. When you look at European budgets and also European institutions, are you envisaging specific programs for these areas which are often depressed and which have connection problems? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Miguel. Now we are going to try to finish this first part of the debate with Ms. Beckmitsen. Ms. Beckmitsen, you have 2 minutes if you can connect.
But we can't fix that now. We spent so much time before this meeting trying to get on. So maybe I should just speak without the camera.
Well, if you speak without the camera, there will not be interpretation, but okay, let's do it in English. You have 2 minutes. Ms. Beckmitsen, are you with us? I'm afraid that Ms. Beckmitsen, we cannot see you, we cannot hear you. So we are going to move on to the next item of the agenda.
Now?
Yes. Can you hear us or not?
I can hear you. I have problems with my camera, so I'll just quickly answer some of the questions because it doesn't seem like the robots are taking over society just yet with all these basic technical problems. I got some questions regarding IT security, identity theft, blockchain, and I think it's very relevant. I have high hopes that blockchain can be an instrument in helping us both with IT security, but as everything with digitization and IT, it's a double-edged sword because it can also be misused, as we know, for criminal purposes. Actually, with identity theft, I'm very, very concerned about the prospects of deep fake and what that can be used for, both in video and in voice identity theft. So, and that also have the potential to create enormous distrust among the population. So that is actually my deepest concern. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sorry for the technical difficulties, but is what we have to live with. Now, I welcome to Mr. Andrej Korobeinik, member of the Constitutional Committee of the Estonian Parliament. Estonia is a good example of digitization of the public sector. The public administration and the government work mostly paperless with citizens, firms, and enterprises enjoying a vast offer of administrative procedures online and with a high standard of data protection is in true. So he's a good example, an example that most member states should follow. I know he's, he doesn't have much time, but Mr. Koromeni, you have your 10 minutes to take the floor now. The floor is yours.
At least I don't see it, but maybe at some point it arrives. So my personal background is that I do different internet stuff for something like 22 years, and I also serve as a member of parliament from time to time. Currently, for instance, I'm VP of Central Party a fraction in Estonian parliament, which is in Europe part of Renew group. So yeah, here's the presentation, and we are currently on the second slide that gives you an overview of the base of the current Estonian success in digital area. So in the end of last century, there was a project called Tiger Leap that was launched by country leadership. Basically, the head of the project was Estonian president, and the idea was to put computers and internet the second slide is fine. Computer and internet into all the schools in Estonia. Personally, I started to use a free computer, which was connected to internet in 93, I guess, and it was in a public library. And that was really important because children of that time, and you can move to the next slide, became really successful IT entrepreneurs in the 21st century. Slide three, please. So currently, Estonia is one of the leaders in terms of number of startups per capita, and is probably the leader of number of so-called unicorns, companies with valuation of more than $1 billion. So basically, we are number one in the world in this. We have companies like TransferWise, Bolt, etc. So the reason is that children learned how to write a code in schools, and it's not about coding itself. It's more about the mindset that this sort of education gives. Next slide, please, number four. e-government services started to be developed in the beginning of the century, and at that time Estonia had sort of a startup mentality. So we did think things fast. We had solutions before legislation that allowed us to move faster than the other countries. So we introduced ID card that allowed people to put signatures online. So everything currently happens online. We and it was this way for 20 years. We have we used to have back then online tax department. All banks were online, so people basically almost never went to the real bank office, and so on and so on. But the main reason behind that is that there was a strong leadership. There were people who felt that this is really important. It's number one priority for the country, and it was done fast and successfully. Slide number five, please. And basically, the main reasons for main ways of building successful e-government digital services are the fact that you are able to identify every user. And I know that that's sort of a concern for some countries, like, say, Germany. It's basically some kind of ideological issue not to issue, like, ID card or unique user number to every citizen. But it's hard to build connected services without that. Then there is another underlying layer below all those services that allows them to exchange data. That means that every piece of data in every service is unique, so you don't have to copy, say, address or birth date. It exists in just one place and easily sent to any other service that may need this piece of information. And then there is, of course, some tax advantages. We have zero tax rate for enterprises. That means that you can reinvest your profit, and that's especially important for IT companies. So we managed to keep those couple of those big successful IT companies here in Estonia, and that helped us even more than, you know, major universities, because we have a small country, and companies like Skype really helped to grow new engineers in this field. Next slide, please. And of course, you know, our main issue is that we started early, so we have a bunch of legacy issues. If we would start today, we would do it differently. But 20 years ago, you know, technology was as it used to be back then. So we can't move as fast as, say, some African countries that are doing their main projects right now. But we do see some opportunities. We launched the e-residency program some 10 years ago, and it's really successful. It allows people to apply for, say, user account, an ID card without citizenship, so they can use all the government services from anywhere in the world. And it pays out. We have a lot of tax revenue from companies like that. You can establish company online and do everything online without ever coming to Estonia. This year, we launched a digital nomad visa for people who can work in Estonia by being a tax resident of any other country. And then basically we try to create some sort of an API for government services that could be used by others. We believe that at some point, it sounds maybe harsh, but at some point, states will become sort of service providers. So we will compete for the customers with other countries, and we try to position ourselves well right now. So that was it. Last slide, please. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Korovenik. Quite interesting. For you, if not, we understand that you have a busy schedule. But I will move on now to Mr. Kopriva from the Czech Republic. Mr. Kopriva, you have 2 minutes. The floor is yours.
Chair, we have lost Mr. Kopriva. We are going to get in touch with him to try to reconnect him. Thank you.
Okay, then we will move to Mr. Berti, that I read on the chat that he's also having technical problems. Mr. Berti, are you with us? Can you take the floor?
Può spingere il pulsante speak, per favore. Grazie.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Sir. Yes, we can hear you and we can listen to you. The floor is yours, Mr. Berti.
The presentation from the Estonian representative, Mr. Korbenik. And I want to represent you that the Five Star Movement, which I am a member of, a member of the parliament since the 2018 election, is trying to digitalize as much as possible the public service which every citizen has the right to receive from its government. We are inheriting a very different, difficult situation in the public administration in Italy. The average age of the public servant is 52. So we are trying to do a warp speed process and process of digitalization of public administration. In 2019, we create the Minister of Digitalization and Innovation, which is now currently held by Mrs. Paola Pisano. And we truly believe that as government, as service, as the speaker said, that in Estonia was a major focus point during the last years. We will include, thanks to Mr. MP Nicolo Invidia, in our budgetary law, the DESI index, the Digital Economy and Society Index, which that will be attached to our budgetary law in order to analyze all the money that we spend in the state budget that will be spent in order to digitalize our public administration. It's true that the European Union in the last 10 years has pushed for austerity politics, which have shrunk the possibility for the state to invest in its own organization and in the young people, which are digital native. And this for sure has impeached the possibility for the state to innovate itself and to also in what can be the next in the future of digital public service. But if you think about the app that can enable us to trace and to detect the coronavirus, the digital app that can be easily installed by everyone and doesn't need any specialization for the user, but need, on the other hand, a lot of specialization from the health professional. And this investment, with little investment, can help us to defeat and trace the contact of coronavirus and trace the cases. So we are truly committed to invest in digital innovation for the future of our country, for the future of Europe. And we have to set up a higher standard of digital public service in Europe to enable the citizen to feel also closer to the state and to feel closer to the public administration. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Berti. The example of the app is a good one, but it's also a good example of how member states didn't manage to make, from the very beginning, an interoperable app with the same system and with the same characteristics. So there is still a lot of things we have to do to get to that level of coordination in the digital era. I'm going to give now the floor to Ms. Alexandrova. The floor is yours. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Anna Alexandrova. I'm an MP from the parliamentary group Citizens for the European Development of Bulgaria, and I'm chairman of the Legal Matters Committee. We have advanced in the e-government a great deal since 1914. The legislative, institutional, and technological framework of e-government has advanced considerably. We have passed legal Electronic Government Act. We have the respective state agency, which will map out the policy in this respect. We have advanced in the strategic framework for electronic government. We have mapped up the strategy for development of the e-government for 1923, which is based on the European principles for electronic government. Our e-government act has enshrined the key principles, European principles. We have adopted the architecture of e-government, and we have included all spendings for the e-government in our budget. The single model, which we have developed as a functioning mechanism for claiming, payment, and provision of electronic services, it's an act which will be applied by all administrative bodies. We have developed 374 electronic services through this model now. we have over 28,500 claims through for e-services since the beginning of 2020. No longer the citizens need to use paper forms. The number of non-paper claims has increased a great deal, including the criminal record certificate. Since November 1st, 1980, the administrative bodies have stopped exchanging paperwork. Now we have introduced interinstitutional exchange of documents, electronic exchange of documents. We have a single portal for access to electronic services.
You're online again.
Thank you very much. We'll give the floor now to Mr. Boss. Mr. Boss, you have 2 minutes.
Mr. Voss, can you push the speak button, please? Thank you.
Mr. Voss, the floor is yours. May I kindly ask you to press the speed button, sir? Thank you.
So far, I've got some problems here with my camera, so that's why probably... Please take someone else before I'm coming back. I try again.
Okay. On this list of speakers, I see that Mr. Kopriva is on the plenary session, so he's not going to be able to intervene. And Mr. Korovenik, who opened this this part of the debate, already had to leave. I want to remind to the other colleagues that they are connected, that whenever they want to take the floor, they just can press the raise a hand button to ask for it, and I will give the floor to them. So now let's move on to the next part of the debate. I want to welcome to Ms. Emilie Cario, member of the Finance Committee of the National Assembly of France. The French legislator used digital legislative tools in the preparation of the law for a digital republic adopted in 2016. Moreover, the civil society was invited to contribute to this drafting of the law via a dedicated digital platform put in place by the government. This drafting process of this law provides a good example of such digital tools enabling civil society participation. Ms. Cario, you have the floor for the next 10 minutes.
Oui, bonjour à tous.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for organizing this session so that members from parliaments across the EU can share their experiences. Well, France has developed several digital tools over the past 30 years, and the tax office, for example, is one of those, but also health insurance. Millions of accounts are handled in a digital manner. But France has always been a little bit reluctant to push digitalization too far in order to protect people's rights on personal data and also fundamental data. We had a law on the protection of citizens that was created to ensure that the state does not react in a disproportionate manner just because the state has files containing information pertaining to citizens. This was adopted in 1968, and this also had an impact on the European legislation adopted later on. Now, we have seen much advancement in digitalization. What others were saying, such as data such as telephone calls and invoices, for 20, 30 years, these have been controlled very strictly, whether it comes to administrative access or judicial access. There have been scandals which have shaken France over the years. It is the General Finance Directorate that has really pushed for digitalization. It started at the beginning of the 2000s. They wanted to make a great deal of investment, and this allowed tax returns to be made digitally, but we've also increased digitization of firms and legal entities' tax returns. For example, we have pay-as-you-earn on natural persons. So those who do not have any exceptional income do not need to actually do anything apart from their basic tax return because of this. And many data come from employers and private persons. So we've been able to create this mixture between public and private players. More and more procedures are being carried out now online. Another example of progress. 2 years ago, we adopted a law on combating social and tax fraud. This authorizes a number of data mining activities which were not permitted before. It was forbidden, as I say, and very strictly regulated by the independent organization which regulates whether personal data rights are being respected. So these include data on social organizations, health insurance, unemployment benefits, in order to combat fraud. A year ago, we authorized data mining, which relates to social media, in order to prevent, for example, the sale of illicit substances. This is something which is very limited in scope, and it will be evaluated by the French Parliament soon. We are doing all we can to be able to move forward on the medical digitalization. We need to be very cautious on this subject because of the need for privacy when it comes to medical records. Now, we recognize, and I think it would be interesting to regulate this at European level, because in certain municipalities in France, there are key players outside Europe involved, especially those from the United States. You talked about the development of this law. A few years ago, we adopted a law which is called the Law for a Digital Republic. And when it was designed, we organized a public consultation to be able to determine what they feel about what is contained in this law. This was a real progress for democracy because, for once, the Parliament, in real time, asked what the public thought about the government, the law being proposed by the government. We also saw that consultations often could avoid the problem of lobbies being given too much focus. This is quite a technical law, as I say, on it's a digitalization. 100 percent of the responses came from an engineering school in Toulouse. So public consultations on very technical issues may always fall in the hands of the same lobbies. But I think that this experience should be extended to all types of laws which affect the daily lives of all French people. Now, today we are facing a pandemic in all countries of the European Union, and I think that we are reaching the limits of the French Parliament in terms of democracy. For example, when it comes to adopting laws, today we're not able to vote electronically in the French National Assembly. This means that votes are carried out by delegation, but when a majority group delegates its votes to one person, there is no more democratic control. There's no democratic arena. So we have asked our members in the group I belong to, we have asked them to implement procedures, either much more refined delegation or remote electronic voting during the pandemic. Unfortunately, we've had 8 months of the pandemic, but the situation hasn't changed so much. The health situation in France is very alarming at the moment, and we are going to return to this problem of delegating votes. I think the pandemic has, at the end of the day, pushed us to make a great deal of effort to digitize, and this kind of video conferencing is more and more common in the French Parliament. We are doing as many meetings as possible like this to avoid spreading the virus, of course. But we can also see in education, lessons are being given electronically, remotely. This was not possible before in France, even in higher education, but now this is very common. So this pandemic has forced us to move forward. But when it comes to developing laws, we have a great deal of progress to make. There has been one source of progress this year. The Parliament has a platform now to collect citizens' petitions. So these are all of the subjects that our citizens want to inform members of Parliament about. These are all now collected by a digital platform. So we are advancing step by step. This, our country, has a great deal of history when it comes to the rule of law, but it's quite a bureaucratic system with a great deal of paperwork necessary. Often we have been slowed down in our progress of digitization, but we need to respect public freedom and the right to personal information, and I think the GDPR is very important. We are committed to applying those rules, but when it comes to democracy in the pandemic, I do think that we have some progress to make there.
Thank you very much, Ms. Carriou. To add on to the French experience, I would also like to give the floor now to Mr. Munir Majoubi. Mr. Majoubi is member of the Committee on Foreign Affairs, also on the National Assembly of France. So you have, Mr. Majoubi, 5 minutes. You have the floor.
Can you push the speak button, Mr. Majoubi? Thank you.
Mr. Majoubi, can you hear me? Okay, we cannot hear you. May I kindly ask you to connect your mic? Just pushing with your finger on the mic icon and refreshing your internet page. Thank you. Can you try now? Now, can you try to talk?
Do you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yes, thank we you, can. Sir. The thank floor you.
Fantastic. So, my name is Mounir Majoubi. Bonjour, je suis député.
Good afternoon. I am a deputy in the National Assembly and I'm a former Secretary of State in Emmanuel Macron's government in charge of digitalization. I will not speak today about all topics on digitalization. I'm only going to talk about citizens' involvement in participation and drawing up of legislation. I'm going to talk about the opportunities and challenges that we face in the different initiatives that we have undertaken in recent years. The previous speaker talked about the provisions that have been implemented and the specific participation that we had for the law on the digital republic. And that law arrived at a time where just before that we'd had a presidential election in 2012 and then in 2016. And for the first time, the topic of participatory democracy had really taken off in France. One of the major topics when we talk about this is who is participating. So yes, this law for a digital republic was a success, but it's a nuanced one. We had 4,000 contributions, but if you compare that to about 66 million citizens, it actually means that very few people participated. However, if you look at the history of participation in France, it was the first time we had that many people contributing. So the question we need to ask is who participated, who contributed to this consultation? And we said a moment ago that it had emphasized the role of certain pre-existing lobbies, and that's true. But it did also leave space for new lobbies. They weren't used to contacting the parliament. They didn't know how to organize a coordinated strategy to influence law making. So let me give you two examples of communities who did actually manage to influence the law and benefit their community. And the first group was the Association of Deaf people in France. They were able to mobilize, they mobilized the media, all of their networks across the country, so that in this law there were articles on making sure all public services and digital services would be accessible to deaf people. And so that was only possible because the tools inspired this group to come and influence the legislators. And a second community that benefited from this civic participation was a video game, the video game community, both the producers and players. They also mobilized in a major way to come and influence the creation of this law, and that really was a great success. When we came to 2018 with Emmanuel Macron, we wanted to continue and boost that civic participation. We asked ourselves, what are the ingredients? What's the recipe for civic participation to be really widespread? And we tried to come up with an analysis of that. And I'd like to share some of the good practices with you today. When it comes, one of the biggest ways of involving citizens is we saw that after the mobilization of the Gilets Jaunes, the group, the Yellow Vest movement in France, there was a major digital debate, and within that, there were 2 million contributions. In the physical debate that took place in France, there were 10,000 physical meetings and 17,000 sites for French people to come and share their opinions. And so one of the first recommendations I would make is to give people time. It's also to give them space, and it's to give them support. Now, when we talk about giving time, it means that if you want people to participate, you have to give them time to explain why it's necessary to participate, how they can do so, and you have to help them work out for themselves what it is they wish to say. You can't do that over a couple of days or a couple of weeks. To come up to create a kind of movement here, you need to give months of time. You need to give people months and months to get together, to structure the process, and that is the only way they can get organized and make a significant contribution, whether that's online or in person. The second point I made was to give citizens space. If you want people to participate, you need to give them a whole range of spaces where they can participate. We talked about online platforms, and I think that is a very important place. People need to be able to participate online in an easy way. They don't necessarily need to be able to identify themselves there. They don't have to contribute in a complex way. They just need to be able to give their opinions so they can give an intelligent contribution. However, people who can't access online need to be able to give their opinions as well. So you need physical places, or in places where I can go and my contribution will be registered on the internet by someone else. And the third point is giving civil citizens support. This isn't easy, and it's not normal for people to participate in the decision in law making. French people aren't used to it because we haven't got a history of it really. But so you need to support them, but it's very expensive. To come back to this grant, this is the major debate that we had that I mentioned.
Nish, you have 30 seconds left.
Okay, so you have to give people time, space, and support. And if you do that, then you will make progress, and they will make progress too.
Thank you very much, both of you, for bringing such interesting perspectives. And those numbers were quite impressive, Mr. Mayubi. I'm going to give now the floor to Mr. Séjourné from the Renew Group. Mr. Séjourné, you have 2 minutes.
Chair, Mr. Séjourné is not connected.
Okay, I had him on the list. So I will move to Mr. Magalhães from Portugal. Mr. Magalhães, are you with us? You have 2 minutes.
Thank you for the information that Madam Speaker offered. Our situation from the digital point of view is quite similar, meaning that we have a program which we called Simplex, allowing to suppress bureaucratic procedures and at the same time replacing them for new and simpler procedures. And at the same time, tools, digital tools, are being created to allow citizens to have an easy access to services which used to be extremely complex. For instance, the ones related to taxes, which now became considerably easier, and part of the work is done by the public administration. Then we have a problem subsidizing. What do citizens without the appropriate knowledge and literacy do, or how are they supported and helped? We have several solutions for that purpose. But the problem will only be solved when we have better communications at the country level in certain regions which have suffering communications, deficient communications, and the have level of qualification of citizens is upgraded, and or when we manage to invent solutions to help them. That is a consensual point, the need for changes, and will be soon approved. We have already approved and will be soon drafting the final version of a charter of fundamental rights in the digital era, which will define very clearly the public policies towards the good objectives and develop certain norms which have remained at the constitutional level only. The European response to the challenge is crucial. We hope the Digital Services Act will help, and we fully agree that participation is crucial. We have several tools, namely the debates are transmitted, not only transmitted through the usual procedures, but in the internet, through the internet, and access to the portals of each committee are guaranteed through the internet also, where you can get every piece of proposals, documents, instruments, preparatory instruments, and use them freely. There's no limit to that. And in what comes to petitions, we have a specific tool at the Parliament website allowing citizens to electronically file petitions and subscribe them easily. So that's the way to do it, and in pandemic times, in a very increased way. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Karamanli. I don't see if she's online. I have you on the list of the speakers. Would you like to take the floor? I don't see she's taking the floor. I don't see any other speaker taking the floor now. So before moving on to the next debate, I would like to ask to Ms. Cariu and Mr. Mayubi a question myself on this law for a digital republic. In Spain, it was something done similar in 2007, so many years ago, but it never got fully implemented. They tried to digitalize or start digitalizing all the administration, but the main issue, the main wall that the government faced back in the time, and we're facing it right now, was the digital alphabetization of the bureaucrats. There was a huge problem with that generation gap when it comes to use digital tools. And that is why, although in Spain they tried to move with a lot of time and perspective to try to digitalize the administration as a first step to engage in this digital era, that was one of the main issues that we have been able to actually succeed. So I would like to ask them, what has been done in France to try to also to help all the bureaucracy, all the bureaucrats to get to enough digital knowledge to be able to use everything in this digital era. I will start now with, if it's okay, with Mr. Mayubi. You have the floor for 2 minutes or 3 minutes. Let's say 3 minutes, Mr. Mayubi.
Yes, thank you for your question. Well, when you work with the representative of the public workers in France, you vous rendez compte que effectivement.
Well, you realize that indeed there might be a problem with training civil servants for digital appliances. But actually, the truth is that most of them do use Facebook at home. They use WhatsApp with their families, and on the contrary, when they come to work, we're giving them tools that are actually less high performing than the ones they use at home. So while we do need to support them and provide them training, what's important is that we need to also give them modern, up-to-date, smart tools to work with. We can't ask civil servants to accelerate the digital transition but not give them the tools to carry that out. So how can we give easier, more agile tools to these civil servants to help them advance here? A second point is a cultural one. What are the civil servants' concerns and fears when it comes to the digital transition? And so in recent years, we've worked a lot on structuring a physical network, saying that when we do take steps in the digital sphere, we're not abandoning the physical one. We're doing both at the same time. So while we make progress by supporting civil servants and guaranteeing conventional methods and saying we're not going to destroy their jobs in that way, then we've built trust. And to be honest, it's more on the side of the general public that we have a problem of digital illiteracy. And we have about 20% of French people who aren't able to carry out tasks online. So that's how we dealt with it in France.
Thank you very much. Before giving the floor to Ms. Carew, I see that the coordinator of the PPP group, Mr. Boss, will also like to take the floor now. So if it's okay, I will give the floor to Mr. Boss and then to Ms. Carew to finish this part of the debate. Mr. Boss, the floor is yours. You have 2 minutes.
Vielen Dank, Herr Vorsitzender.
Thank you very much, Chairman. I hope I can speak German, says the Speaker. Well, I've listened to the French experience just now, and it seems that this relates to citizens and to what extent you can involve citizens in French, the French legislative process. And so there are obviously problems in terms of whether there's political will there, what kind of an experience it is. But in addition, you have the question as to whether that shortens or lengthens the legislative process. I mean, when it comes to certain aspects, shouldn't we try and move to digital ways of working so that we can shorten procedures, so that we can respond to the speed of developments in the digital world as legislators and Democrats? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Boss. So I will give now the floor to Ms. Carew. Ms. Carew, you have 3 minutes.
Chair, she left. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We move on to the next part of the debate. I would like to welcome Professor Dr. Sabine Kuhlmann, University Professor and Vice Chair of the National Regulatory Control Council in Germany. Professor Kuhlmann will discuss how the COVID-19 pandemic brought about the need to accelerate the digital transition at EU and at national levels. Professor, you have the floor for 10 minutes.
Thank you very much. I have prepared a presentation with some slides. It would be good to show them, to share the screen. Well, thank you very much. Next slide, please. So the structure is as follows. I will first introduce into the model of better regulation in Germany, as I'm the representative of the National Regulatory Control Council, which is responsible for better regulation in Germany, and which also has a key role in pushing for digital government, for digital administration and legislation, and which also had a specific role during the pandemic. Finally, I will refer to how the crisis, the pandemic crisis, has worked as an accelerator, which one of the previous speakers also referred to, that the digitalization was to some extent pushed and supported by the crisis. Next slide, please. And next. Thank you. What is better regulation in Germany? So from our perspective, it includes that we, as a regulatory control council, which is an independent body, so not supervised by the government, an independent body, we try to make sure that a regulation is never more complicated or costly than it has to be to achieve a politically defined objective and a democratically generated policy goal. So this is what we try to make sure, collaborating with the ministries and scrutinizing any new legislative proposal of the federal government. Next, please. So we are an independent body located at the German Chancellery, but without any hierarchical control by the government. We are now in our third term of mandate. The council is based on a specific law, the NKR law. And our task is to support, but also to control the federal government in the field of better lawmaking, better regulation, and to check all new federal legislative proposals in terms of compliance costs, but also longer-term impacts and administrative simplification, which also includes digitalization, electronic government. Next, please. Next. Thank you. So the powers of review of this council is, on the one hand, as you see in the core of this circle, to measure and to make sure that compliance costs are evaluated by the respective ministries in a methodologically sound manner. But there are a few additional competencies, such as checking whether a new German law is a one-to-one transposition of EU legislation or whether it's a kind of gold plating. Administrative and legislative simplification, including digital government, and a number of further issues. Thank you. Next slide, please. Next. And next. Yes, and now I would like to talk about what has been particular and specific during the pandemic. So most of the regulatory activity of the federal government in Germany was, of course, focused on pandemic mitigation and containment measures. Although it's mostly lender and local governments being responsible for containment, enacting containment measures, there have been a number of regulatory proposals and legislative proposals also coming from the federal level. There was a very specific situation that these regulatory proposals and also proposals regarding social and economic impacts of the pandemic have been negotiated and coordinated only within a few days. So it was really a speed-up procedure of legislation during the pandemic. And against this background, the Regulatory Control Council abstained in many cases from a formal statement in these urgent cases, provided that compliance costs were correctly displayed and that the criteria of better regulation, the principles of better regulations, were followed by the respective ministries. Next slide, please. And the next, again. Next. Next slide, please. Thank you. So what has been the focus and particularities of legislation during the pandemic? So there were a number of statutory orders coming from specifically the Ministry of Health, but also a number of legislative initiatives for to support the second round effects of the crisis related to employment, economic rescue, social welfare, financial and tax policies. There was also an adjustment of the federal budget and suspension of the constitutionally enshrined debt break. As a result of these legislative initiatives, considerable compliance costs resulted from these activities. And the National Regulatory Control Council measured a total, so far until today, a total of more than 9 million euro of annual compliance costs resulting from these regulations. And more than 700 million one-off compliance costs for businesses, administration, and citizens. This regards specifically the hospital ordinances, so the stocking requirements for ICUs and hospitals, but also tax legislation adaptations necessary from the side of the economy, of the businesses regarding new tax legislation. Next slide, please. And next. And to what extent has the crisis been an accelerator of digitalization? So we have one problem in Germany, that we are not ranking very high in the digital agenda index and in the digitalization indices. As you can see from this slide, the red column is Germany and the gray column is the EU average. So we have to speed up our activities in terms of digitalization. Next slide, please. This is why the crisis was also used as an opportunity for reinforcing investments into the digitalization of public administration. And there were several initiatives coming from the federal parliament and the federal government to support this speeding up of digitalization. One example is the social protection package, where there was introduced a new opportunity of having digital proceedings and hearings in social and labor courts. There was a change in the general rules of procedure of the German Bundestag, the German parliament, to facilitate virtual meetings in the plenary and committees and voting based on a lower quorum. So this is a different model than was presented for France. In Germany, the French model was also discussed, but there was no majority in the parliament for this model. So what has been done is to lower the voting base, so there's less votes are necessary for a quorum. Also, there are experimental clauses for the German parliament for meetings, and which could probably also made a permanent rules. And finally, the economic stimulus packages, which was enacted in June in order to kick off the economy after the pandemic. A major goal of the stimulus packages was to enhance digitalization and also to support sustainable technologies. More than 4 billion euros were allocated to digitalization of public administration, including 3 billion euro allotted to the introduction of local e-services only, because local government is the key institution of delivering services to citizens in Germany. So, and another goal of this stimulus packages was to speed up the implementation of a new law, which is called the Online Access Act, and which provides that until 2022, about 600 services, public services, have to be digitalized, to be available for citizens in a digital manner. That has been more by the online and now we need to speed up activities in order to achieve this legally defined goal of introducing such a high number of electronic services in Germany. And the next slide, which is the last slide also, gives an impression how this implementation of the Online Access Act is organized in Germany. You know, we are a federal. Oh, we have the lender, we have local governments, and we have the federal level. So we have three levels, and all these levels must collaborate in this setting. And the table shows you to achieve a higher degree of digitalization and to achieve these 600 electronic services. And the organizational structure is as such that for each field of services, be it family services, housing services, or other kinds of tax services, there's always one federal ministry responsible and one state, so one Bundesland, responsible and take the lead for the digitalization. And the idea is that all other actors will take over and will implement this solution, which still is a huge discussion. We are still working on this. And hopefully the crisis, the pandemic can furthermore be used as an opportunity, as a window of opportunity to speed up this overall process. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Coleman. We open the floor to Ms. Escanté from Poland. If I'm correct, Ms. Escanté, you have 2 minutes.
Ms. Kante, can you please push the speak button? Thank you.
Now, you hear me?
We hear you.
Yes. Thank you very much. I'm very honored for participating in today's meeting and for addressing you on this important challenge, lawmaking, but also justice delivering during a strong pandemic. Justice is a fundamental public service in any European state founded on the base of the rule of law and must provide citizens with the opportunity to solve their disputes and defend their rights, including during pandemic. Therefore, e-justice became nowadays a definite way of accomplishing the act of justice. In Romania, the implemented measures adopted by the Romanian Parliament and also by the Liberal government have created the grounds for a modern and more efficient public service for justice. These measures emerged from a crucial executive document, namely the presidential decree of March 2020, by which the exceptional state of emergency was set up and which also provided the legal framework for using secured video conferences by the courts and by prosecutors' offices, which gradually expands now from the criminal cases to civil cases. Thus, the hearing of the persons from the detention and penitentiary centers and also the conduct of the court hearings are carried out now in a secured video conference system. And we use also the electronic file and the electronic transmission system for all procedure documents. In order to ensure access to real and fast justice, Romanian Parliament adopted also a law which allows citizens affected by COVID-19 to challenge in court the restrictions or the mandatory sanitary measures. For example, for the applicant hearing, if COVID-19 patient, we are using now video conference or telephone transmission, online assistance for the citizen by a chosen or ex officio lawyer, and of course, electronic communication of all procedural documents. While legislating for e-justice, a balance must be maintained to respect two fundamental features of the act of justice, the public character of the court hearing and also the solemnity of this procedure, ensuring at the same time, I think, the most important, the preservation of the fundamental rights of litigants. I thank you right now. I conclude by congratulating the committee for holding this meeting in virtual format. Digitalization of justice is a fundamental component of the current European Commission program for shaping Europe's digital future. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much to you, Mrs. Kante. I will give now the floor to Mr. Bakay from Hungary. Mr. Bakay.
Hi, my name is István Bárkai. I am from the Hungarian Parliament and I'm a member of the Fidesz political group. I've had many interesting interventions over the course of today's meeting and I'm very happy to be here today. I'd like to talk very briefly about what is happening in the Hungarian Parliament. Since the 1990s, we have implemented a number of tools to ensure that we can use digital tools in the members' everyday work. In 2017, we had an introduction of several tools. And I would like to say that our system was awarded a Best Practice Prize in 2019. This was by the European Institute of Public Administration. Now, when it comes to the system, the system we have in place provides assistance to all members of the Hungarian Parliament, and it means that members are able to use these digital tools as part of their work. When it comes to data protection, data security, we have not had any successful cyber attacks. All of the data have been kept secure. And I would like to say that when it comes to data security, we've been able to develop a very good system. Obviously, some people are not happy. We can never be cautious enough when creating a data system. Now, several people today have highlighted one issue, and that is how we can digitize the legislative process and face the challenges that we face. Well, when it comes to digital tools and digitization, how does this relate to the issue of constitutionality? In the digital arena, we need to look at the constitution and legislative processes. We should not forget that in this digital era, these are not just tools. These are things which completely transform the world, and they can transform our relationships. And it's moving at breakneck speed. If we look at...
Mr. Bakay, but I have to close you here. You took almost double of the time, and the meeting has to finish in the next 2 minutes, and the interpreters will not stay with us longer than that. Permítanme, antes de concluir esta reunión, darle las gracias a todos los ponentes.
Before we conclude, let me thank all speakers, members of the European Parliament and members of national parliaments as well, for their interesting contributions. This is a very topical and important debate. I'd also like to thank the staff and technical staff of the Legal Affairs Committee of the European Parliament, who have made it possible for us to hold this hearing remotely, which is a historical event. I think it's important for democratic institutions to adapt to the digital world. We also need to adapt our processes. The COVID-19 pandemic has shown us the need to be creative when it comes to doing our parliamentary and legislative work. As President Sassoli said, the European Parliament will remain open because a virus cannot damage democracy. In spite of our technical difficulties, the meeting we've held today and previous meetings in the European Parliament are going in the right direction, but we need to be more ambitious. The Parliament needs to be open to the requirements of our citizens. Our citizens are used to interacting rapidly via digital media, and they're more and more aware of the impact of EU legislation on their economic, social and political rights. EU member states have also been affected by what's going on, and some of them have started to find responses to online procedures, and they have ensured that public administrations are accessible online to citizens. This is all unprecedented. It shows that the COVID crisis shows that governments need to be able to operate digitally, and in addition, we need to be able to legislate digitally in the European Union and in member states. The European Parliament needs to lead the way towards a new digital Europe. We need to have a digital legislative process and also ensure that our frameworks can easily be used online. We also need to boost cooperation with other institutions in the European Union and in each and every member state. To conclude, what we've heard today reminds us that digitalization and legislation needs to
take place in terms of form, but also, and above all, in terms of substance. So we need to have more and more contact with civil society, with citizens' organisations and businesses. We need to know how they're affected by the increasing digitalisation we see and the challenges they face. This will require political will and dialogue between different areas on the political spectrum. This will enable us to ensure that we become more digital and also more dynamic and effective, and ensure that artificial intelligence, which is coming, respects our values. So thank you again. I would call on all those present to boost cooperation between different parliaments, and I would urge you all to work hard along those lines in the future. Thank you for being with me. Thank you.